Live from the Daniel Scappin Studio, deep in the foothills of the North Georgia mountains, it's Mike Malloy.
All right, hello everybody. Welcome to the Friday version of this podcast. Boy, Michael Cohen apparently has made a decision in light of the probably mountain of evidence that the prosecutors in the Southern District of New York have put together. It seems like he's made a decision that he is he's not going to be the fall guy for this ignorant son of a bitch in the White House. Earlier this evening, I was out and about, and I was listening on MSNBC. And apparently, Cohen and Michael Avenatti, who has, you know, really been ragging on Cohen for the past 6 months, they met at a restaurant by chance and had a conversation. And then apparently the Reverend Al Sharpton had some kind of a happenstance meeting with Michael Cohen, too. And in both those conversations, the way they're being reported by the principals, by Reverend Al Sharpton and Michael Avenatti, in both instances, Cohen was expressing determination that he was not, I think this was a quote, not going to let the country down and wasn't going to let his family down. And of course, immediately Rudy Giuliani, when that tape was released, that first one, or not released, but when it became evident that there were tapes involved, this sick fucker Giuliani immediately rushed out around with his hair on fire, you know, winding up on Fox, I'm sure, saying, oh, it's exculpatory evidence, exculpatory, everything's fine. No, Rudy, no. Sorry, you hysterical son of a bitch. But anyway, it appears that Cohen either has or is going to do the right thing. I would suggest that for a while, Cohen travel with a fully armed bodyguard. Seriously. Trump wants to be like Putin. Putin orders people to be murdered. When Putin finds out that they're saying bad things about him, Putin, Putin just has them either murdered with poison substances, or he has them shot in the hallway of their own apartment, or stabbed to death in a hospital, or I'm sorry, in an elevator. Come on, Mike. Goon. Stabbed to death in an elevator. Putin's a murderer. There is just no, there is no equivocation or doubt or argument. Vladimir Putin is a killer. Trump wants to be like Putin. I'm sure that Putin is, well, okay, yeah, I'm sure that Putin is getting word to, or has gotten word to, maybe in that 2.5 hour meeting to Trump, not to leave any witnesses. Especially someone like Cohen. I think Michael Cohen finally woke up and smelled the poison that is Donald Trump. I'm just guessing. You know, this case of Cohen, this has nothing to do with Mueller, although Mueller was the one who came across this stuff and then turned it over to the jurisdiction that should be turned over to, the Southern District of New York. But it appears Cohen has made some decisions. You know, he's a young guy. He's not going to go to fucking prison for 30 years. Are you kidding me? He's not going to go to prison. He doesn't want to go to prison for 1 year. And there's only one way that that's not going to happen. And that is, he, if he is a fully cooperative witness with the prosecutors in the Southern District of New York. That's why I really do believe that Cohen better be careful. Car accidents still happen. Shit can fall from six stories up and crush a person. You can accidentally slit your own throat. You might fall out of a 10-story window. You know, shit happens in New York, right? But the part today, the way the day started was it today that became apparent that Michael Cohen secretly recorded this asshole Trump. That was 2 months before the election. That's when they discussed payments to one of Trump's one of the women with whom Trump was involved in one of his many adulterous, lying, filthy affairs. I'm not saying the woman was, although, you know, I can't get my mind around a woman who knows that Trump is married, knows he's a liar, knows he's a thug. Why are they having sex with him? But that's a whole different story. I mean, consensual sex. Anyway, 2 months before the election, they discussed payments to a former Playboy model who had an affair with Trump. That's according to lawyers and people who have listened to the recording. According to the New York Times, the recording's existence appears to, like this, undercut the Trump campaign's denial of any knowledge of payments to this woman. Undercut? No, it doesn't undercut. It once again displays Trump for what he is, a fucking liar. The man cannot tell the truth about anything. And he's a president. He's a president. And also this tape, and Avenatti keeps making the point. He made it 3 months ago. There's more than one tape. Yeah, I doubt seriously if Michael Cohen said, gee, I think I'll tape the president the next time he calls and then I'm finished. Oh no. I think Cohen understood that he was dealing with the devil and he had better have the devil on tape or digital recording, whatever it was. Anyway, the recording draws Trump into questions about tactics he and his associates use to keep aspects of his whoring around, no offense to the woman, his whoring around a secret for fear that it might interfere when this story came out 10 years after it happened with this particular woman, for fear that it might turn voters against him. The voters were already against him. Remember, he lost the election by 3 to 5 million votes. Had it not been for the willing assistance and a leg up, you might say, of his buddy, the murderer, Vladimir Putin, Trump would have lost the electoral vote also. But Trump knew that Putin and Putin's entire GRU operation, military intelligence. These fuckers in Russia are, I hate to say it, but they're probably the best at what they do, even better than the Israelis. Well, a close foot race there. But the Russians have been doing this since before Israel is even a state. Israel's good at what they do in terms of spying and all this other horseshit. But I don't think anybody has it down the way the Russians have it down. So the conversations between Putin and Trump, I don't have any doubt about this. I haven't heard shit. But because my mind travels in those directions right now while I'm writing this book, you know, if you've written something, if you've written a piece of semi-fiction, which I guess is what I'm writing, you know how your mind all of a sudden – you start to look at things differently. just normal happenstance events, daily occurrences. Because all of a sudden you find yourself looking for the storyline or what's really going on. What do those words really mean? How could that situation have been structured in a way, the situation in Helsinki, that assured Trump that Putin has his back? Putin is the only person on earth who has Trump's back, who can have Trump's back. All these little fuckers around him in the White House, they're shit. They're dirt under Putin's feet. They don't mean anything. All these little bastards on Fox, they don't mean anything. Not anymore. The only thing that means, the only person that means anything to Trump is Putin. Because Trump understands that he is in so fucking far over his head that nobody, when the rubber hits the road, so to speak, nobody is going to remain loyal to Trump. Not even that little shit, Sean Hannity. He'll run like a, you know, like he's got a firecracker up his ass pretty quick here. So Trump understands that the only person that is going to protect him, take care of him, is Vladimir Putin. Now, you could do worse than having the former intelligence operative for the KGB running your interference for you. You could do a lot worse. I mean, he could have Kim Jong-un running his interference, or Xi of China, both of whom can really do some fucking damage. But Putin? Oh. Now, Kim Jong-un may have more corpses to his credit than Putin. But the Russian society is relatively open. It's wide open compared to North Korea. And I think that's the big difference. So anyway, the speculation now is who put the word out about this tape, this one tape, and what it contained, the conversation between Trump and Cohen about the payoff to this woman to keep her fucking quiet. This was a couple of months before the election in 2016. Even though the affair with this particular woman happened 10 years previously, 2006. But if that's not obstruction, I don't know. I need a new definition of what obstruction is. What the Trump operatives did, aside from the backing of Putin and Russian military intelligence and all these fucking trolls and spies that operate out of Russia and out of various countries under the command of Vladimir Putin, Putin takes care of all that. Nobody farts in Russia of any importance unless they get Putin's permission. So that left Trump over here. What's Trump going to do? Well, the one thing he does, he keeps talking and bullshitting and digging his hole deeper and going out on his little campaign trips to get the bobbleheads to cheer him on. And he'll talk about, oh, that Hillary Clinton. Sorry, Donald. But he really is in way over his head. You know, Trump is what, 6'1", 6'2"? He's in 30 feet of water, mud, slime, and he's drowning. And I can't wait to see how this movie plays out. Anyway, the woman involved, but let me back up. This particular tape, just this one, highlights the potential legal and political danger that Cohen represents to Trump. And that's why I say, Michael Cohen, I would travel with an armed guard. I doubt if he's out on bond or bail or whatever, I'm sure Michael Cohen is not allowed to carry a gun. But were I he, I would have a couple of gunsels right behind me, fully loaded. And I also would probably hire someone to taste my food if I went to restaurants, which Cohen apparently is doing. I'm serious. I worry about his safety. What?
He really is having a food taster?
I said that's what he should have. So Trump now realizes, if he doesn't, he's even stupider than we all know him to be. But Trump realizes now that the jig is just about up, at least where it concerns Cohen and what's happening with the Southern District of New York, which Trump can't pardon anybody. These are not federal crimes. Trump is fucked. And Cohen, what I was going to say, the speculation is, why was this tape released? Or what the tape said released. I don't think the tape itself has been released. And the speculation is, it's Cohen telling Trump, I'm through fucking with you, pal. You shit on me for years. Now I'm the shitter and you're the shitty, Mr. Trump. Apparently, Trump really insulted and denigrated Michael Cohen. Poor little Michael Cohen, right? He goes to work for a mob boss, a thug, a crook, a criminal, a grifter, a liar, a cheat. What the fuck did Cohen expect? But once Trump got going in the campaign and it became apparent that the Russians were telling him, listen, we can pull this election off for you. You just don't worry. We'll take care of the Electoral College. If you people didn't have Electoral College over there, you Americans, you dumb fuckers, you'd never be president, Donald. But you do have the Electoral College, and that's what we're using to springboard you into the White House. And then we're really all going to just make tons of money. So Trump, at the very end, knew that his Russian handlers were not going to let him down. They would make sure that in those three, I guess, the electoral votes would go to him. But he had nothing for Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen, to Trump in that moment, was what Michael Cohen has always been. Just a peripheral character that Trump would say, fix this for me. Get this bitch off my back. Take care of this. Hide some assets. Don't let these creditors know where I've got shit stashed. That's what Cohen was. That's the lowest rung, believe it or not, in a mafia organization, the fixer. He's just called on when there's shit to clean up. You saw Pulp Fiction, didn't you? Remember when the young guy in the back of the seat gets his brains blown out and they have to call the fixer? That's what Cohen was. But Cohen didn't see himself as a fixer. Cohen saw himself as somebody ready to step into the Trump administration as what? White House counsel? Oh, my God. Some position. Trump would give Cohen for all those years of service to Trump by Michael Cohen, being his gopher, being his fixer, cleaning the shit up that Trump produced, all the scut work, all the crap that Cohen went through, all the lies that he had. But Cohen, probably being a New Yorker and understanding the criminal mind, he knew he was working for a criminal. That's when he started taping his phone calls. I heard today that the tapes or the recordings, they're not tapes anymore, but the recordings that it is suspected Cohen has amassed, that those recordings constitute a veritable trove of information that will lead to all kinds of bad shit for Trump. If Trump were a not the president of the United States, all kinds of indictments. Now, of course, they can indict him when he leaves office. But, and Trump knows this, Trump knows that the guillotine above his phony fucking head is hanging by a couple of thin threads all of a sudden. Anyway, the story, I'm sure you know the story. The model, the former model involved here, Karen McDougal, said she had a lengthy affair with Trump in 2006, shortly after Trump's wife, Melania, gave birth to Barron. I mean, that's real fucking tacky, isn't it? Huh? So the woman, Karen McDougal, sold her story for $150,000 to the National Enquirer. And the guy who runs the National Enquirer, what's his name? Prick or penis or it's, No. What's his name? Stiffy. Yeah, it's a word that a pecker, pecker, that's his name. Pecker, right. I couldn't think of it. Pecker. Every time I hear his name, I think, God damn, that's what we boys used to call each other back in eighth grade. You pecker. So Pecker, who runs the National Enquirer and the company, actually the company that owns several of those toilet paper Enquirer style tabloid supermarket checkout tabloids. Pecker and Trump go back years. And Pecker's job has been, see, Trump had lots of fixers. Pecker's job was that every time Trump put his wee-wee someplace where he shouldn't have, and the wee-wee receiver decided, hey, wait a fucking minute here, and decided to go public, that's when Pecker, David Pecker, not Trump's Pecker, but David Pecker would step in and say, hey, I'll tell you what, give me your story. I'll pay $150,000, but it's exclusive for me. I'll have you sign documents. You can't tell anybody else. And so it's called catch and dis- not, it's called catch and kill. I think is what they call it in the journalism business. It's called catch and kill. You get the story, and it's usually some sleazy tabloid bullshit involved. You pay the person, and then you kill the story. So that's what Peckerhead did for Trump all those years. While Cohen is cleaning up the messes that Trump left, Peckerhead was making sure that people were silenced with lots of money. See how that works? So the catch and kill thing effectively silenced Ms. McDougal for the rest of the campaign. Peckerhead came through, just like so many people who were loyal to Trump, not realizing that Trump would no more be loyal to them than he would remove his own pecker. Not David, but his own. That's just not Trump. Trump doesn't do loyalty. Yeah, fuck that. Now, poor old miserable Rudy Giuliani. What a decaying skeleton this guy really is. And he's Trump's personal lawyer, of course. According to the New York Times, Giuliani confirmed today, in a telephone conversation, that yes, Trump had discussed payments to Ms. McDougal with Michael Cohen. Giuliani said that the discussion was less than 2 minutes long. Oh, well then, if it was less than 2 minutes long, let's just forget it. It was less than 2 minutes long. And Giuliani said Trump didn't know he was being recorded. Well, of course he didn't. That was a whole fucking idea. And Giuliani said that the tape revealed that Trump had done nothing wrong. Giuliani said there was no indication on that tape that Trump knew before the conversation about the payment from the National Enquirer of David Pecker's parent company, American Media, Inc., to the woman that Trump had the year-long affair with. So Giuliani runs around with his hair on fire, telling anybody who'll listen, mostly those assholes on Fox, that nothing in that conversation suggests he had any knowledge of it in advance, so it's all exculpatory. That's a pretty cool word there, Rudy, exculpatory, huh? I don't think it's going to work. Now, Giuliani initially indicated that the two men, Trump and Cohen, discussed a payment from Trump to McDougal separate from what Peckerhead at National Enquirer was paying her. Later, Giuliani said that Trump and Cohen had actually discussed buying the rights to Miss McDougal's story from Peckerhead, a move that would have effectively reimbursed Peckerhead's newspaper for its payment to her. You're following this, right? We are wading through a feces clotted sewer of this presidency. And it's not going to stop. It's only going to get worse. Especially with this invitation to the killer. Hey, come on over to my house, Vlad. Let's talk. I'll bring in a couple of chicks. Oh, you say chicks in Russian. Giuliani said the payment was never made, the payment from Trump to Cohen to the woman or to Peckerhead. The payment's never made. And he added, Giuliani did, that Trump had told Cohen that if he were to make a payment related to Miss McDougal, to write a check rather than send cash. Write a check. So it could be properly documented. You talk about the gang that couldn't shoot straight. Now, wait a second. If you're paying somebody off to keep their mouth shut because a flapping mouth might cost you the presidency, and you say, let's pay that person by check, so there's documentation? What the fuck? Wouldn't you want to pay that person with cash and everybody goes home and nobody says a word? I don't know. I'm just not gangstery enough, I guess. I'm sure there was a reason for the check. Anyway, neither of Giuliani's descriptions of this conversation that occurred between Trump and Cohen, this one particular conversation, now I'm sure there are more on tape. Neither of Giuliani's descriptions of the conversations explain why, when the Wall Street Journal revealed the existence of Peckerhead's payment days before the election, Trump's campaign spokeswoman, Hope Hicks, remember her? She said, we have no knowledge of any of this. Okay, well, that's fair. But then she added that McDougal's claim of an affair was, quote, totally untrue. Oh, Hope. You stuck your foot in it there, sweetie. It's just incredible. It's just incredible. Peckerhead, the chairman of AMI, American Media, whatever it's called, is a longtime friend of Trump's. And Ms. McDougal, for her part, has accused Cohen of secretly taking part in the deal, an allegation that is now part of the FBI investigation. Giuliani said, referring to the length of the conversation, here it comes again, it can't be more than a minute and a half. Twice, someone walks in, someone brings sodas in for them. It's not some secret conversation. Giuliani, oh my God. Ooh, okay, Rudy. And then Giuliani said, neither one seems to be concerned anyone to hear it. It went off on irrelevant subjects that have nothing to do with this. It's a very professional conversation between a client and a lawyer. And the client saying, that'd be Trump. The client saying, do it right. Now, do it right, in this particular instance, I think you'll agree with me, has a couple of different meanings, right? Do it right would mean leave no witnesses. Do it right would mean follow the law. Do it right would mean do what Jesus would do. See, there's all kinds of do it right in coming out of Giuliani's pie hole. Do it right means leave no witnesses. And then Giuliani argued that because the tape showed Trump, according to Giuliani, learning about the payment from Peckerhead for the first time, Giuliani says that actually helps Donald Trump. Giuliani said, quote, in the big scheme of things, it's powerful exculpatory evidence. Woo. I don't know which one's the bigger peckerhead. I think it's Giuliani. Anyway. In an interview with ABC News this month, by the way, Cohen has publicly and privately discussed the idea of cooperating with the FBI. Cohen seems to be openly inviting prosecutors to talk to him, which during that ABC interview, and I'm sure the prosecutors have been talking to him on a fairly regular basis. Cohen said in this interview with ABC, he said, quote, my wife, my daughter, my son have my first loyalty and always will. I put family and country first, end quote. And those words got this asshole in the White House got his attention. Family and country first? What the fuck are you talking about? Put me first, motherfucker! Family? Country? What have I hired here? Right? That's Trump. Trump asked people if they thought Mr. Cohen was trying to send a message. Oh, my God. Donald Trump, you are the most ignorant savage ever. Ever. Oh, my God. Anyway, Trump continues to deny knowledge of the payments, which is bullshit. Trump has denied everything. He never had an affair. He doesn't know stormy weather. He doesn't know this woman. Nothing ever happened. I've never put my pecker anywhere it shouldn't be, unless it was David Pecker. I know I'm innocent. Totally. Trump is a fucking liar about everything. That's all he's ever done his entire life is lie. So we're to believe him now when he says, I don't know about those payments. Yeah. Okay. His denial, they didn't know anything about it. That's what helped suppress public allegations during the last few weeks of the presidential campaign. Deny everything. Now, the payments, depending on how and why they were made, and I'm sure you heard this today, I heard it several times, could represent campaign finance violations, which, believe it or not, is sort of serious. Remember the case of former Democratic Senator John Edwards, who was going to be president? He wanted to run for president, who tried to hide a pregnant mistress during his presidential campaign? Remember that? Oh, my God. Poor Michael Cohen. I mean, his ass really is in a vice here. Because in doing what Trump insisted he do, Michael Cohen put himself in all sorts of legal jeopardy. All sorts of potential legal jeopardy. And Cohen knew it. I mean, he's not a stupid guy. I mean, he's... I don't know anything about Cohen. I don't think he's stupid. But he was investing in Trump. And that investment went totally south. We'll take a break. Be right back. Stay with me. all of a sudden favorite columnist, up there in the top three anyway, and she's a conservative, Michelle Goldberg, who writes for the New York Times. But I think Goldberg is a real conservative, you know, not this bullshit today, these fascists. But anyway, I digress. She raised a very interesting question. And she said that she writes of all the interlocking mysteries of the Trump-Russia scandal, the one that she finds particularly perplexing are members of Congress, the Republicans, this utter hangdog attitude that they have, that they're just not going to say anything about Trump. If this were a Democrat president with a Republican House and Senate, he would have been impeached, tried, and sent home by now, just on what Trump has done with Putin. So what's the deal here? That's the question Michelle Goldberg asks. She says that, you know, she knows that the Republicans are thrilled with the judges this fucker is appointing and the tax cuts and all this other stuff. And given how Russia, she writes, has become a patron of the right, the fascist right globally over the past decade, some Republicans might welcome Russia's intervention into our political system. They love it. They believe that Democrats, and this is where the bobbleheads, the Trump, the ones who give Trump a blowjob in a second, this is where they go, yup, yup, yup. The Republicans believe that the Democrats are more of a threat to this republic than the Russians. Now, as she points out, another reason, probably the predominant reason, maybe, that these Republicans are so fucking quiet as they watch the country being handed over to the Russians by this asshole in the White House, the reason is because they're a bunch of fucking cowards. And they're afraid. They're just so afraid of nasty tweets or the base abandoning them. So they shut up while the country goes down the shitter. It's unbelievable. But then Michelle writes this, but that doesn't explain why, for example, Speaker Paul Ryan, a Russia hawk who's retiring in January, allowed his party to torpedo the House Intelligence Committee investigation into Russian interference in the election. Wasn't that a farce? Huh? That was the David, what's his first name? Nunes, that little prick. Devin Nunes. Michelle writes, Ryan, after all, knows full well who and what Donald Trump is. Here we go again. In a secretly recorded June 2016 conversation about Ukraine obtained by the Washington Post, Michelle writes for the New York Times, the House Majority Leader, Kevin McCarthy, said, quote, there's two people I think Putin is paying, Rohrabacher and Trump. You know, Dana Rohrabacher. Now, Ryan didn't disagree. What he said was, well, what's said in the family stays in the family. What happened? Stays in the family? I'm totally fucking blown away by that. What stays in the family? The Republican caucus is the family, like the fucking mafia. What happens in the family stays in the family. Yeah, you know, Putin may be paying Trump and Rohrabacher, but shh. Omerta. Silencio. Jesus Christ. And Michelle writes, if he, Ryan, were the least bit patriotic, or even if he just wanted to set himself up for a comeback when Trump implodes, Ryan would have stood up for the rule of law in the Russian inquiry. And she writes, it's hard to see what he got in return for choosing not to stand up for the rule of law. And then the sentence. Michelle writes, this week, just ending, a new possibility came into focus. Perhaps, rather than covering for Trump, Republicans are covering for themselves. See, if the NRA accepted Russian money, and they did, it's just a question of how much. 100 million, 200 million, we don't know yet. And then distributed that Russian money to hardcore gun nut fuckers in the House and the Senate. The NRA gave them the money. Then these members of the House and the Senate are implicated in treason. There's another way to put it. Michelle writes, last Friday, Robert Mueller indicted 12 members of Russian military intelligence for their interference in the 2016 election. The indictment claims that in August 2016, Guccifer 2.0, a fictitious online persona adopted by the Russian hackers, quote, received a request for stolen documents from a candidate for the U.S. Congress, end quote. The Russian conspirators obliged, sending, quote, the candidate stolen documents related to the candidate's opponent. Now, if you've been paying attention, you know that these rat fuckers in the House and the Senate have done nothing to find out who that candidate might be. And I say it's because it's multiple candidates. They're talking about Hillary Clinton's server. Back to Michelle. Then on Monday, we learned of the arrest of Maria Butina, who is accused of being a Russian agent who infiltrated the National Rifle Association, the most important outside organization in the Republican firmament. Legal filings in the case outline a plan to use the NRA, the Russians, to push the Republican Party in a more pro-Russian direction, which means a fascist direction. Butina, Maria, appears to have worked for Alexander Torshin, a Russian politician linked to organized crime in Russia and the United States, who is the target of U.S. sanctions. She developed a romantic, oh, please, relationship with Paul Erickson, conservative operative close to the NRA. Erickson, in turn, wrote to a Trump advisor in May 2016 about using the NRA to set up a back channel to the fucking Kremlin. The NRA, people. These murderous sons of bitches. Now it turns out they, too, are agents of the Russian government. Holy fuck. But I digress. The young Russian woman clearly understood the political significance of the NRA. In one email, according to court papers that have been filed in this case, she described the central, quote, place and influence of the NRA in the Republican Party. Through her pro-gun activism, she became a fixture of the conservative movement and was photographed with influential Republican politicians. And these weasels, these filthy pigs who make up the board of directors of the NRA. A Justice Department filing quotes Torshin as comparing her to another young Russian, famous Russian agent. He said, quote, you have upstage Anna Chapman. She poses with toy pistols while you are being published with real ones. End quote. And then Michelle Rosenberg gets to kind of the heart of this whole thing here. She writes, if the NRA as an organization turns out to be compromised by the Russians, it would shake conservative politics to its foundation. Maybe, maybe not, Michelle. And this is no longer a far-fetched possibility. Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat of Oregon, told Michelle, quote, I serve on both the intelligence committees and the finance committee, so I have a chance to really look at this through the periscope of both committees. And what I have wondered about for some time is this whole issue of whether the NRA is getting subverted as a Russian asset. Ron, Michelle, take it from your humble and obedient servant who has been claiming the NRA was a fascist organization for maybe 10 years, 15. Of course the NRA is a Russian asset. What do you think? The NRA is out there to offer safety tips when you go hunting ducks? So, Michelle writes, that's not a question that Republicans are eager to answer, whether or not NRA is a Russian asset. Before Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee abruptly closed their investigation into Russian election interference, remember how they did that? Remember how Nunes and the rest of those rotten fuckers would not call a single witness that could have said anything negative about the people who own the NRA and own numerous Republican members of Congress? The Russian military intelligence, and they don't fart either without Putin's permission. You do understand this, don't you? You think I'm just making this up out of whole cloth? No. Committee Democrats wanted to interview both Maria Butina and this Erickson character, the one she had the affair with. But, of course, Nunes and the Republicans said, oh, fuck, no, time. No, we're finished. Everything's cool. Quick, send the report to Sean Hannity and Fox so they can get on their sewer scope and let their viewers know that it's all over. There was nothing, which is exactly what that little pissant Sean Hannity did. Adam Schiff, California Democrat, who's the ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee, said, quote, if there were efforts towards a back channel regarding the NRA and the Russians, they, the Republicans on the committee, didn't want to know about it. It was too hot to handle, end quote. Well, see, there again, I kind of disagree with Adam Schiff. I don't think it was too hot to handle unless he means it would have exposed these fuckers to treason themselves. That's what I think. The Republicans on that committee knew. We are in this vat of shit up to our hairline. Let's end this investigation, which is what they did. Michelle writes, it's not surprising that Republicans would want to protect the NRA. According to an audit obtained by the Center for Responsive Politics, the NRA's overall spending increased by more than $100 million in 2016. Increased. Do you think that money came from subscriptions to their magazine or selling little buttons and shit? The Center for Responsive Politics in their report wrote this, quote, the explosion in spending came as the NRA poured unprecedented amounts of money into efforts to deliver Donald Trump the White House and help Republicans hold both houses of Congress, end quote. Well, it's a free country, right? If they want to support candidates, they can. Yeah, but not with Russian money. Ron Wyden, or no, McClatchy Newspapers has reported that the FBI is investigating whether this this gangster, this Russian gangster, Torshin, illegally funneled money to the NRA to help Trump. Ron Wyden has also been trying to trace foreign money flowing into the NRA, but has found little cooperation from the NRA, his Republican colleagues, or the Treasury Department. Wyden said of the NRA's conflicting responses to his inquiries, quote, "The fact is the NRA has flipped their position more times than a kid does on a summer diving board," end quote. Now, you know what the NRA has acknowledged receiving from the Russians? $2,500 from Russians or people living in Russia. Mostly for dues and magazine subscriptions. Ron Wyden said Republicans on the Intelligence Committee have thwarted his attempts to look deeply into the Russian money trail. Well, fuck yes. Of course, Ron. I mean, Michelle has it. You have it. Schiff has it. There are God knows how many Republicans in the House and the Senate who are on the payroll of Russian military intelligence. Jesus fucking Christ. Do you believe this? You better. On Monday, a few hours after news broke of Butina's arrest, the Treasury Department announced a new rule sparing some tax-exempt groups, including the NRA, from having to report their large donors to the IRS. Oh, another coincidence. Ron Wyden called that move by the Treasury Department, quote, "totally, truly grotesque." He added that it would make it easier for Russian dark money to flow into American politics. Michelle says, you might ask who benefits. The answer is not just Trump. Let's take another break, Kathy. I don't know if this is stirring up some sort of reactive feelings inside of you. I don't know. But this is the kind of shit that just makes me crazy, to think that these filthy Republicans and this rotten bastard in the White House are doing this to us. Why don't we stop them? Past couple days, I've heard some of the television people, guests on various programs on MSNBC, talking about the how thankful they were that a guy named Will Hurd, has come out and stated categorically that Donald Trump is being manipulated by Vladimir Putin. Now, I didn't know who Hurd was. Well, it turns out he's a former CIA officer, and right now he's a member of Congress from the 23rd District of Texas. And, yeah, he's a Republican. Let me share a little bit with you of what he wrote. He says, over the course of, this was in the New York Times, over the course of my career as an undercover official at the CIA, I saw Russian intelligence manipulate many people. I never thought I would see the day when an American president would be one of them. Now, in this next paragraph, he categorically states charges that are nothing less than impeachable. Here's what he writes. The president's failure to defend the United States intelligence community's unanimous conclusions of Russian meddling in the 2016 election and condemn Russia covert counterintelligence campaigns, and his, Trump, standing idle on the world stage while a Russian dictator spouted lies, confused many but should concern all Americans. By playing into Vladimir Putin's hands, the leader of the free world actively participated in a Russian disinformation campaign that legitimized Russian denial and weakened the credibility of the United States to both our friends and foes abroad. As a member of Congress, a co-equal branch of government designed by our founders to provide checks and balances on the executive branch, I believe that lawmakers must fulfill our oversight duty as well as keep the American people informed of the current danger. Now, Will Hurd's piece goes on, and frankly, I don't know what all the cheering was about, because all he does is restate what a lot of these cowardly bastards have been saying ever since the Helsinki mutual masturbation event that occurred when Trump and Putin got together. Talk is cheap. The Republicans right now could remove this piece of shit from office before the midterm elections. Maybe quicker. The Republicans in the House and the Senate, and once it got to the Senate, they get a lot of cooperation from the Democrats. The Republicans could remove this piece of shit from the presidency before the midterm election. You want me to say it again? Trump has violated every single standard, norm, God knows how many laws and rules. He has appointed people who are fucking destroying this country environmentally, financially, in matters of trade. And these Republicans in the House and the Senate are doing nothing. And I am not a columnist employed by the mighty New York Times like Michelle Goldberg is. She has to be a little cautious in what she writes, but that's not me. These Republican members of Congress, I think the surprise is not going to be that some of them are on the payroll of the Russians through the NRA. The surprise will be how many of them are. The religious right in this country and Putin, now that he's a very good Russian Orthodox Christian, these vile sons of bitches have been working together back channels for the past, well, since Putin has been in office. What's that been? 15, 16 years? The Christians in this country are also committing treason. I don't know if you call it committing treason. They are defining themselves as traitors to the United States. And, it goes without saying, apostates in their own faith. If there was a Jesus, he would be thunderbolting these motherfuckers left and right until they're all dead. This is unbelievable stuff. An example, I read today that the Interior Department yesterday proposed a whole bunch of changes to the Endangered Species Act. Remember that? Remember how long ago was it? The spotted owl controversy. The logging industry said, "Oh, if you set aside certain parts of the Pacific Northwest because of the spotted owl, we're all going to go bankrupt." Well, none of them did, I don't think. The Endangered Species Act, by the way, was the law that brought the bald eagle back from the brink of extinction, the Yellowstone grizzly bear. But Republicans say that the Endangered Species Act is cumbersome and restricts economic development. Now, what they're proposing to do is to make it easier for roads and pipelines and construction projects and drilling to gain approval than under the current rules. This is Donald Trump's wrecking ball approach. This is what that piece of garbage Steve Bannon called the deconstruction of the regulatory state. This is what Rand Paul really celebrates. Rand Paul is like Bannon, who's like Trump. Destroy it all. The Interior Department, according to New York Times, also intends to make it more difficult to shield endangered species, like, for example, the Atlantic sturgeon. Oh, fuck it, it's just a fish, right? As we know, if you've been watching the news, battles over endangered species have consumed huge parts of the West for years. That's what the spotted owl controversy was all about. Big fucking deal, just a bird. Woo-hoo! Confrontations over protections for the spotted owl. And remember the issue of the sage grouse, this little prairie chicken, and the gray wolf? The Republicans, the Christian Republicans, want to kill everything. They want to destroy, and replace the natural habitat with fucking mining operations. Because Republicans, the only time they go out into the wilderness is to kill shit. To kill moose or deer or what have you. I'm not against deer hunting. But if it's the only time you go out is to kill shit, what does that say about you? But that's Republicans. Now, the changes proposed yesterday by the Fish and Wildlife Service, which is part of the Interior Department, and the National Marine Fisheries Service, which is part of the Interior Department, they wouldn't be retroactive changes, but they could set the stage for opening up more offshore drilling and will smooth the path for projects like oil and gas drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Now, there's a guy named David Bernhardt. He's the Deputy Secretary of the Interior Department, right? And he said that the law, Endangered Species Act, that was passed during the Nixon administration had not seen major changes in 30 years. And Mr. Bernhardt described the proposals that the Interior Department has come up with as proposals that will streamline and improve the regulatory process. He rejected, David Bernhardt, rejected a suggestion that these proposals would help the oil and gas businesses and fuck up what's left of natural habitats in this country. Bernhardt said this, and here's more newspeak. Quote, together these rules will be very protective and enhance the conservation of the species. At the same time, we hope that the new rules will ameliorate some of the unnecessary burden, conflict, and uncertainty that is within our current regulatory structure. End quote. Brett Hartle, Government Affairs Director at the Center for Biological Diversity. You can tell by the name that he's on the good guy side. He said, quote, these proposals would slam a wrecking ball into the most crucial protections for our most endangered wildlife. End quote. Now, none of this, this is what the Trump gangsters have been tasked with doing, not necessarily by the Russians. The Russians don't give a fuck about our spotted owls. The Russians just want to humiliate the United States, which they are doing quite well here lately. But the changes are it's part of a broader pattern of these attempts to destroy the regulatory process and the regulations by the Trump administration. And it's aimed at reducing costs and other burdens for businesses, particularly the carbon business, oil, gas, and coal. Last month, according to the Times, the Trump administration also started the process of rolling back the National Environmental Policy Act, which is a law that you and I have never heard of, but it's considered the cornerstone of environmental policy because it lays out the process that federal agencies must follow when they're considering major infrastructure projects. Now, you know what that means when they have public hearings. Even though in so many instances the government of the United States does not consider the conclusions worked out in these public hearings by environmental groups, whether they're First Nations people or just plain old white people who want to save the country or plain old black people who just want to save the country. The right wingers don't give a fuck. You know, you've seen one spotted owl, what the hell? You can go to the zoo if you want to see animals, right? The wilderness is to exploit. Robert Gordon, who is a fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, that's one of the Koch brothers, AstroTurf organizations. You know, there might be three members of this. That's a think tank. Anyway, Robert Gordon said the law is often a burden to property owners. And he pointed to the legal case of an amphibian called the dusky gopher frog. Oh, here we go. The Supreme Court has agreed to consider whether the federal government's designation of private land in Louisiana as, quote, critical habitat, end quote, for the frog, limited the owner's ability to develop it. Mr. Gordon said that if the proposed rules had been in place, the property would have been less likely to be designated as such. Fuck the gopher frog. Do you care about a gopher frog? Much less a dusky one? Oh, now, Kathleen Sagama, president of the Western Energy Alliance. What do you suppose they're about, right? Yeah, the oil and gas industry. She, Kathleen, praised the Trump administration proposal, saying, quote, for too long, the environmental acts have been used as a means of controlling lands in the West rather than actually focusing on species recovery. What? She said she hoped the changes, which she described as a tightening of procedures, would help lift restrictions on, quote, responsible economic activities on private and public lands, end quote. Now, those crazy old environmentalists, again, popped up out of the woodwork and said the changes that the Trump criminals are proposing would gut protections for the country's most threatened species and weaken the agency's ability to address climate change. But Trump and the Republicans don't believe climate change is real. I can't share any more of this with you. It's just too goddamn depressing. Every single day, more of this shit comes across my little space here. All right, we're going to take some phone calls if you like. Oh, does it work? Oh, no, it doesn't work. Try it. Pick it up and let's see what we hear. All right. Hold on, everybody. Put your fingers in your ears just in case.
Oh, they won't hear anything.
Oh, they won't? Will I?
Yeah, it's still staticky.
Oh, it's still... Okay. Now, is that part of AT&T?
I think there's some interference within this unit.
Oh, in there?
Other piece of equipment.
Okay. Just an idea.
Okay.
Now let's turn to sexual misconduct. Why not? I'll get to Father Theodore McCarrick fairly soon. He's a cardinal now. Oh, God. But let's go back to Jim Jordan, the member of Congress from Ohio, who is complicit in cover-ups of sexual violence perpetrated by the wrestling team doctor against members of the Ohio State wrestling team. And the latest is more than 100 former Ohio State University students have come forward now with allegations that this team doctor and a professor at the school committed some form of sexual misconduct with them. University officials at Ohio State announced this today. This is similar to the Larry Nassar scandal that rocked Michigan State University and Olympic gymnastics. Ohio State, which, as you know, is one of the most prominent state universities in the country, is now dealing with this crisis that's spreading like a bad blood stain about this team doctor who committed suicide 13 years ago. Yeah, he just... The school announced a couple of months ago that it would hire independent investigators to look into whether this doctor, Richard Strauss, did, in fact, perpetrate sexual misconduct on former athletes from 14 different sports teams at Ohio State. This fucking guy was insatiable, huh? Like Donald Trump. Investigators expect to interview an additional 100 former students in the weeks to come. That's according to a statement released by Ohio State University's president. Now, the scandal is spreading because more former athletes are decided to come forward and accuse university officials of knowing of the abuse, like Jim Jordan knew of it, and doing nothing about it. Eh, what's a little sexual misconduct? You know, We all do it, right? Two separate class action lawsuits were filed earlier this week by former wrestlers who said their complaints of being sexually abused during physicals conducted by the doctor were ignored. And this scandal has already snared Jim Jordan of Ohio, who at the time all this shit took place, he was an assistant wrestling coach while Dr. Strauss was a team doctor. And we're supposed to believe this lying little fucker from Ohio, this insane little son of a bitch who looks like he's constantly swallowing mouthfuls of amphetamines. We're supposed to believe him that he didn't know anything about it. Nobody ever came to me. Although scores of students and former students have said, the fuck we didn't. We told him. He did nothing. So who are you going to believe? Jim Jordan, of course, like Donald Trump, denies everything. All right, Kathy, if you give me another break and let me get this shit organized here about Cardinal McCarrick. You know what's special about today? You. Neither did I. Man on the Moon Day was on this date in 1969. Who remembers that we first put men on the moon? You were 18 months old? Oh.
I don't remember.
Men on the Moon Day. What a send Trump to the moon. Also got an email here right after I got that one from Scott. I got an email from, I'm sure if you're on 350.org's mailing address. You got it too. But it's from Jerry Foytlin. She's one of the, I guess, board members of 350.org. Remember what 350.org is. The name comes from the idea that in order to save the human species and God knows how many other animal species, we have got to reduce carbon dioxide in the atmosphere to 350 parts per million.
Can't hear you.
You can't hear me? I have to hit this goddamn thing? 350 parts per million. I think that's what it is. Can you hear me?
Stay closer.
Get closer? Is it still working? Don't you love this podcast? At least the camera still works. We've only had that for what, about 7 years, 8 years, 10 years, eight? Six. 350 parts per million of carbon dioxide, and the level we're at right now, it is permanently above 400. Anyway, Sherry writes this, or Cherry. She writes, as you read this, a group of water protectors are sitting in the old growth trees along the path of the Bayou Bridge pipeline in Louisiana. Police and private security arrived, which means now's the time to shine a national spotlight on what's happening in South Louisiana. Calling for solidarity actions and rising together with our...
There you went again.
Am I back? Okay.
Yeah, it's it.
I feel like I'm sitting next to a goddamn snake.
Don't judge it.
There's a wire hanging down here.
Don't touch it. Don't touch anything.
Where's the dump button?
Don't touch it.
Hey.
Don't touch it.
All right.
You.
Seriously, I apologize for this madness. Anyway, back to Cherry Foytland with 350.org. The gendarmes have arrived to start throwing people out of the trees so they can be destroyed. And guess who is, guess what group is going to be most directly affected by this pipeline? Yeah, it's the community, the St. James community, which is predominantly African American. Now, St. James is also known as Cancer Alley because of all the industrial pollutants that have been dumped there by various chemical and petroleum companies. So what you want to do, go to 350.org and see if there's something you can do. Kathy used to be involved in the tree sitters here in Atlanta. One of the iconic parks in Atlanta is a it's a lengthy park that runs alongside of Ponce de Leon Avenue, which comes out of downtown Atlanta and goes it comes from downtown Atlanta all the way changes names, so it goes all the way to Athens, Georgia, and not the park but the street. And the guy who laid out and developed Central Park and many other parks around the country, Olmsted. What was his first name?
Lawrence?
He designed this park here in Atlanta. And 25 years ago, when the Carter Center was in the process of being built, an idea was incorporated into the Carter Center that would build a four-lane highway from downtown Atlanta all the way to Stone Mountain, which is about 18 miles east of Atlanta. And this four-lane highway would be built in order to facilitate people coming and going to the Carter Center. Now, the truth is, you don't need a four-lane highway to go to the Carter Center. Not that many people go there. And Jimmy Carter, bless his heart, was in favor of the road. Well, there's a group put together here called Roadbusters, you know, like Ghostbusters. They were Roadbusters. And a guy named Danny Feig was the one who organized it. And they got a number of people, including Danny, who would climb up these old oak trees, some of which had been there since the Civil War or before. They'd climb up in these oak trees, you know, tree sitters, and tie themselves up in the branches and refuse to come down, and in that way protect the trees. And Kathy was one of the younger people who would bring these folks food and something to drink while they were sitting up there.
And toilet trees.
Well, they finally won and the project to build this road was canceled as a result of a court ruling. And the Carter Center was built, and it's a very happy place. A lot of people go there to solve global issues. Jimmy Carter is happy. Rosalind is happy. City of Atlanta is happy. Everybody's happy. Isn't that great? But 25, 30 years ago, it looked as though, actually it was more than that, 35 years ago. Yeah, 35 years ago. Because you were just a teenager then, right?
I was a junior in high school.
Yeah, you were a teenager. So it was 35 years ago. And had the Roadbusters not been organized, and a lot of the young kids helped, white kids, black kids, Latino kids, they all helped to stop this, and it worked. There was a time in this country, believe it or not, when direct action worked. Now, I would imagine, just like what's going on in Louisiana, if people put themselves up in trees to prevent these rapacious bastards from tearing them down, here come the fuzz. Here come the gendarmes. Here come the people with the ropes and the hooks to pull your ass out of the tree and put your ass and the rest of you in jail. You don't have a right to do that anymore. You know, protest. Take direct action against something our lovely Trump government is doing. All right, Cardinal McCarrick. Let's pretend it's a little story. I'm not going to read the whole thing. James was 11 years old when Father Theodore McCarrick came into his bedroom in northern New Jersey looking for the bathroom. Father McCarrick, then 39 years old and a rising star in the Roman Catholic Church, was a close family friend, whom James and his six siblings called Uncle Teddy. James was changing out of his bathing suit to get ready for dinner. James, who is now 60, recalled in an interview last week, quote, he said, turn around. And I really didn't want to because I don't want to show anybody anything. End quote. But he did, he said, and was shocked when Father McCarrick dropped his pants too. See, we are the same, Father McCarrick said. And the kid said, okay, we're the same. That was the beginning of a sexually abusive relationship that lasted nearly 20 years, James said in an interview. As the decades passed, Father McCarrick became Cardinal McCarrick, one of the most prominent public faces of the Roman Catholic Church in America. He was suddenly removed from his ministry last month over a substantiated allegation that he sexually assaulted a 16-year-old altar boy in 1971. And that news changed our central character here, James's life. He said, quote, I got down on my knees and I thanked God that I'm not alone and it's going to be okay, James said through sobs, recalling the moment. And I can tell somebody and someone's going to believe me, end quote. This is a 60-year-old man who's lived with this shit all his life. Now, interviews and documents obtained by the Times after McCarrick's removal showed that the church hierarchy knew about this shit for decades, that he was a pedophile, and that he was sexually harassing and going after adult seminarians, too. Just a total fucking freak. Little boys today, late teenage boys in the afternoon, 20-something boys at night. What a fucking weirdo. And on Monday this week, the Times reported that a former priest, Robert Ciolek, had received an $80,000 settlement in 2005, in part over allegations that Cardinal McCarrick, as a bishop in the 1980s, had sexually harassed and inappropriately touched him. Another former seminarian received $100,000. Okay, you know where this is going. I mean, it's the same old shit. James, back to James, the central character, he was baptized by Father McCarrick in 1958, 2 weeks after he was ordained as a priest. After McCarrick was ordained, obviously. In a phone interview, James, with his lawyer listening, said, quote, "He had chosen me to be his special boy. If I go back to my family, they tell me that it's good for you to be with him. And if you go to try to tell somebody, they say, I think you're mistaken. So what you do is you clam up and you stay inside your own little shoebox and you don't come out for 40 years. Uncle Teddy. When James was 13, McCarrick grabbed his penis. At 14, the priest masturbated him in a beach parking lot. When he was 15, Father McCarrick took him to a restaurant in San Francisco and poured vodka in his drinks. He then brought the boy back to his hotel room and masturbated him while he brought himself to ejaculation. James said, I was absolutely disgusted, afraid, I felt fear. What have I done? When James was 16 or 17, he said he would go with other boys and Father McCarrick to a fishing camp. On these visits, everybody would sleep together naked. And Father McCarrick, I guess this priest fucker was like he was at a buffet, you know, like going into a Cracker Barrel or something,
Golden,
you know.
Corral.
Huh? Like the Golden Corral. I'll have that boy's ass. I'll have this one's penis. This one over here, well, I want his mouth. Jesus Christ. When James turned 18, he joined the Navy, and he was stationed outside Chicago. When Bishop McCarrick was in town in Chicago, he would call James and tell him to come to his hotel. When James was transferred to San Diego, Bishop McCarrick would invite him to the Beverly Hills Hilton in Los Angeles. James said, quote, he introduced me to the most incredible people in the whole world, Bob Hope. I met the Scarecrow from The Wizard of Oz. Uncle Ted. James left the Navy in 1980 and moved back to the East Coast. He said he would sometimes stay overnight with Bishop McCarrick in the rectory and later in Newark after Bishop McCarrick was promoted to Archbishop in 1986. By then, James said he was drinking heavily and doing drugs, habits that he said began in his teenage years. He said he tried to get away from this fucker, my word, in 1985, after meeting a woman he went on to marry. The last time he visited Archbishop McCarrick in 1989, he asked for money. McCarrick refused and never called him again. By then, James was 31. Instead of feeling relief, James said, he spiraled downward. I am done, he said. He has thrown me away. His marriage fell apart, and in 1991, he attempted suicide. He landed in detox, and he says he's been sober since. James said he only told a few people what this priest had done to him. He said his uncle, now dead, advised him to take the secret to his grave. As James became sober, he told his AA sponsor and a therapist. But now James wants to take action against Cardinal McCarrick, to give courage to others who might have been abused and to find some justice for himself. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I'm sorry. Very believable. Kathy, quick break, if you would, please, if you have a short break for me here. Catholic priests who become bishops and archbishops and then cardinals. You know, I sometimes wonder. I know a lot of Catholics. I grew up with a lot of Catholics. But I sometimes wonder if there is a more corrupt, filth-encrusted organization worse than the Catholic Church. One last little thing I want to leave you with is a little bit that happened during the third presidential debate between Trump and Hillary Clinton in 2016. Trump, he's referring to Hillary. Trump says, "Putin, from everything I see, has no respect for this person," meaning Hillary Clinton. "Well, that's because he'd rather have a puppet as president of the United States." Trump, "No puppet, no puppet." Clinton, and it's pretty clear, Trump, "You're the puppet." "You're the puppet. You are, you are. Mom said you're the puppet." Jesus Christ, and now he's president of the United States. All right, folks, that's all from me for now. I'll see you Monday. Kathy promises me the microphone will be fixed and maybe even the phone. We'll see. Have a good weekend. Take care. Keep it lipped. I'm Mike Mullen. I'm going straight to hell. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kenny, wherever you are. I'm going straight to hell. Won't you love me sing along? Say goodnight, Kathy.
Good night, Kathy.